Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Good morning, you're very welcome to the programme. As you heard in the news, Owen Murphy, Fine Gael TD and former Minister for Housing has announced that he's out of politics and he's here. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks very much for having me on this morning. Mixed emotions, I suppose. I mean, I've been a politician now for 12 years and it kind of defines you. It's how you kind of defined yourself and a member of Fine Gael for 12 years. And to be stepping away from that is tough. It's a bit daunting. But I'm also excited about the future as well.
So what's happened today? Are you no longer a TD as you sit here?
I'm no longer a TD. I spoke to the Ken Corlett last night. How it works in terms of the process is I have to write a letter to him to inform him officially. And that letter was given to his office this morning. So that's how it happens. Mm-hmm. And back to the civilian life.
And are you a member of Fine Gael?
Still a member of Fine Gael and still committed to Fine Gael. That's not going to change.
Have you spoken to your party leader, Leo Varadkar?
I have, yeah. No, I spoke to him. I mean, to be fair to him and to everyone, there were certain people I was trying to keep in the loop as I was coming to this decision. So, I mean, and how I came to the decision might be worth explaining. I suppose most people know me as the Minister for Housing, but I've been a politician for 12 years, 12 incredible years. And it was an incredible honour and a privilege to have that opportunity. But before I was in politics, I worked in international affairs and international arms control. And since Christmas, I've been reflecting on those 12 years, 10 years in the Dáil, 4 years as minister and everything that I did. And like a lot of people, I suppose, because COVID gives us that time, I've been thinking about my future and where that might best be. Where can I best make my contribution now and next? And I decided that I wanted to get back into international politics.
Okay, so did you have those conversations with yourself prior to the election of last year?
No, absolutely not. No, I mean, this is something that has only kind of crystallized in my mind in the last kind of couple of months, and then something else happens. Its own logic takes over. So once I realized I want to go and do something else, you kind of realize, well, is it right to stay as a TD? Is it fair on anyone else? If I'm sitting here in Leinster House taking what is a very generous salary from the public purse, but I'm not 100% committed to it, is it right to, you know, be going into the Dáil next week and voting on things that affect so many people, knowing that I won't be held accountable for them at the next election? And once I answered those questions, I realised that the right thing to do, as I see it anyway, is to resign now. And that allows me the space to go and do this other work. But also it allows the constituency the chance to replace me and get someone new in at a very important time for Irish politics and Irish life.
Have you something lined up?
No, but it's something I'm very interested in doing. It's related to my degree and it's something I've done before. And I think opportunities are going to be coming up. And it didn't sit with me to all of a sudden be sitting in my house or my office in Leinster House, you know, actually applying for jobs. So now I have the freedom to do that.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't been applying for jobs?
No.
So Leo Varadkar's statement this morning pays tribute to you. And he says he was aware for some time that you were considering your career options, although I'd hoped that he would stay in the Dáil, given his abilities, flair and talents. Clearly, you decided not to stay. But that seems to suggest that he was trying to influence your decision. He was trying to convince you to stay on. Is that right?
That's fair. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's a personal decision. Like, it is something that I wanted to make sure that people like himself and other people in important positions in Fine Gael were aware at least of my thinking. So when I came to a decision, they wouldn't be surprised. And this really did crystallise just a few weeks ago, but I've been thinking about it for a few months. Mm-hmm. And he was aware of that.
Fine Gael haven't had an easy time of late. I mean, was it said to you in the course of your deliberations by the party leader, the timing isn't great here, you're giving us a headache that we don't need?
Well, I would love to think that I'm not replaceable or something. But in this job, as in many others, there's people waiting in the wings to come in and take your place. People who are very hungry and they've got good ideas. And politics should be about that constant renewal and refreshment. I know to some people who are political observers, the idea that someone might only do 12 years and only in inverted commas. Actually, as I see it, was a very good stint. But also, I think politics in Ireland, there should be more moving in and out.
Mm-hmm. You were a very important moving part in Leo Varadkar's election to leader of the party. Mm-hmm. You were Minister for Housing. Then after the last election, you weren't a minister anymore. Did that impact your relationship with him and your view of yourself within the party?
No, not at all. I've always had a very honest and open relationship with Willie O'Bragar. That's how he does business, actually, behind the scenes. And that's how he does business in public life as well. But no, I mean, at the time, you know, we came through the election. It was a tough election for Fine Gael. It was a tough election for me. And then we were straight into the COVID pandemic. And so I was a part of that first response. And that was really important work. And every minister had a different part to play. And then the negotiations to form a government. And I was in the negotiations. And I was very well in those, well aware in those negotiations that I was talking to the future Minister for Housing when I was talking to some of the Fianna Fáil people in the room. And I was trying to get, you know, get some of my advice and my insight and my wisdom to them, because I knew I wouldn't be a part of the housing team.
Did you know that before the election, that you wouldn't be a minister?
No, I mean, going into that election, I think we had very different prospects for our success internally. We thought we were going to have a different outcome. So no, I didn't know that. I mean, I'd had 3 years, no, I'd had less than 3 years at that time. But by the time the new government had formed, I had a full 3 years, and I had a lot more that I wanted to do. And I had all this experience, and I had, you know, the relationships built up, and I knew what was working. I knew what wasn't working. We had in our manifesto some really important stuff still to do, and I wanted to drive that on. But things very quickly changed when we saw the election results.
You had a torrid time in housing. Would you say that's a fair description?
It was a very challenging brief. I mean, it's a huge department. It's not just housing. It's planning, it's local government, it's severe weather events, it's electoral reform, it's the holding of elections and referendums, it's, you know, marine planning and the foreshore, it's our fire services. I mean, it's a very interesting department and there are lots of pieces to it, but absolutely housing, because of so many people were in crisis, you know, was a challenging brief to try and get things fixed quickly enough to help those people.
Yeah, you seem to be the focal point, though, for anger. And at one point during the election campaign, during the election count, you were heckled, weren't you, at the count centre, and the Gardaí had to be called.
Yeah, but actually that wasn't the first time that had happened to me, because at the local elections, when I'd gone along to check in on the Fine Gael candidates, the same thing had happened. And I was used to that. And I think that's part of the job. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't bother me, but when you're the Minister for Housing in a housing crisis and you're making decisions that affect people's lives, or if people feel that you're making the wrong decisions or you're leaving them behind, they're going to have a problem with you. And I think when it comes to politics, criticism is absolutely fair. You've got to hold public people to account. When it comes to getting, you know, personal abuse, I don't like it. Who likes that? I understand it too, because people are hurting and they see you as not.
Are you being a politician now saying that? Because you're not a politician anymore. And if this really got to you, you are allowed to say it. You've just given yourself permission at 9 a.m. to say this was a horrible way to live.
No, like it was tough. It was tough, but it was like, and you develop coping mechanisms. A lot of miles spent out on Sandymount Strand running at night when I get home from work to, you know, when you'd had a difficult day. It's got absolutely nothing to do with why I'm leaving. But I think it's a discussion that we should have in Irish life, because, you know, while I did get abuse, the people around me got abuse as well.
And
I,
your family?
Yeah. You know, a previous girlfriend of mine used to get the most horrific abuse to her face in public. And that's not on. And I talked to my colleagues in the Dáil, and I, you know, some of the women politicians, and Holly Cairns, actually, just because she was speaking about it at Christmas, about the abuse that women are getting in politics. Like, you know, there's something that needs to be discussed, because I think maybe you might have been discussing the Constitutional Convention recently, or I was listening to something on the radio, and I'm all for quotas. I really support quotas to get more women candidates.
Katie on Saturday was
talking about it. You know, and I'm all for quotas and we should support them. But unless we have a bigger conversation about this, we aren't going to be able to attract women into politics, or maybe even new people. But it's got nothing to do with why I'm leaving. I mean, I understood that part of the job in the crisis was to make decisions that not everyone was going to be pleased with. And I knew that that would come with then criticism. And that's part of the job. And that's how I saw it.
But how did the people closest to you react when you were getting heckled, the guards had to be called, things were being said to you on the street?
They get upset. They get upset, you know. They get very protective and they get upset. And that's a very kind of sweet thing to see, and people around you, that they care for you. You know, anyone who's in politics, whether you're in Fine Gael or in Sinn Féin, you're there for public service. You're there because you believe in the public good and you want to try and drive that in a particular way. And we may disagree with each other, you know, like, oh no, Bryn and I are constantly kind of going at it on the housing stuff. But we also agreed on things as well. And if you were a political nerd and watched the committee debates, you'd see us agreeing on amendments and that kind of stuff as well. You know, it's important that politicians can have disagreements without either themselves or the people around them falling into this kind of tribalism, where because I don't agree with your idea, I therefore hate you and want to, you know, destroy you or whatever. But so I understood the criticism at the time. It was part of the job. It wasn't always nice, but that's it.
Going back then to the campaign last year, that image of your poster over the tent of the homeless man whose tent was cleared with an industrial machine when he was in it, was that a turning point in that election campaign for you?
Well, you know, like when you're a minister in government, you have a lot of responsibilities and you have a lot of difficult conversations. So, I mean, if you go back to, just to give you an example, Storm Ophelia, which was one of the first national red we had, and myself and the team in the department were responsible for trying to keep the country safe. And three people very tragically died during that storm. But I remember when I was told about the first death, and that was very hard. And, you know, there were times all through housing when people in very, very difficult circumstances in homelessness died in very tragic circumstances. And every time you're told and you get that conversation, it's very difficult. And it renews your determination, though, and you and your team to just try and do better. And when that happened at the start of the campaign, I mean, like immediately just angry, because you want to know what the hell happened here. Like, how the hell could anyone do this to someone else, accident or not? Like, what's going on? And that was my immediate reaction. And then you think about the person and are they okay and what can you do? And you stop thinking, like, in that immediate instance, you stop thinking about the politics of things, you know. And then, of course, because it was an election campaign, it very quickly came back to that.
Because I was reading Chris Andrews when he was looking back on that campaign just after the count. And he said that everything changed when that happened, that it came up on every doorstep for him.
Okay, if that's Chris's experience, fine. I find it hard to believe that at that stage, people only started talking about housing or homelessness, because they'd been talking. It was like when people went in to vote, there was an exit survey done here, I think, and I think they found that health was the one first reason and housing the second in terms of what was on people's minds when they voted. Like, housing had been the national debate for years at that point. Homelessness was being discussed in the media every day. So I don't think it was a turning point in the national conversation.
It crystallised it for a lot of people, though, that photograph, that image of your poster blowing in the wind over this dreadful thing that had happened.
Yeah, look, and obviously the poster hanging there, like, you know, did not know what had happened there. And, you know, posters you put up on lampposts, if the person who was putting up the poster had known what had happened, of course they wouldn't have done that. I personally, it might have been symbolic of something to some people. I think people and the public, the challenge of homelessness had crystallized much earlier than that. When you think about the images of families in hotels and the people that we left behind in hotels, whom we shouldn't have and are still there, unfortunately, I think it had crystallized people before that. Mm-hmm. And I think you see that in the generosity, that in the donations of people giving personally to the housing charities and the housing bodies.
And the second motion of no confidence was in 2019. And that was the moment, the one that propelled that onto the agenda, was the fact that the number of homeless people stood at 10,500 at that point. It was indefensible. I know you came through that motion of no confidence, but that figure was indefensible, even though you tried to defend it at the time.
Yeah, I mean, so as we approached the end of 2019, a lot of things were really starting to work in housing. We were going to finish up the year with more than 20,000 new homes built, which isn't enough, but it's not far off where we need to be. In 2019, homelessness actually fell for the first time year on year, but that means nothing to someone who's in homelessness. That they've been left behind, and I understand that. And the difficulty with those numbers, even though I tried not to talk about them because I wanted to talk about individual cases and how we help people, but it did say to people, I think your plans aren't working. When, you know, we have been doing so much, and week in, week out, you know, I was meeting new families who'd gone from emergency accommodation into new homes. Not enough, I know, but, you know, I felt that it was only giving one side of the picture when I could see other things that were working, that I just needed more time to get it done. And when the motion of no confidence came up, it was my second one, and that's challenging, you know, personally, but it's also an opportunity to try and tell people, this is what we're trying to do. I mean, like, no one's in there not wanting to fix this problem. I mean, I went in there, and I had this great opportunity to try and fix these things. And we fixed some things and we made some really bold reforms.
But you found it very hard to fix that figure because it remained over 10,000, didn't it, for months and months on end.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't 10,000 when I went in there, but it had been jumping by the thousands every year. And when I went in there, we kind of stabilized it, and it was starting then to fall, but not quickly enough. And that's, like, if I think back to some of the experiences that I had, you know, in my first week in the role, I met a woman who works in early learning, and she was talking about children presenting to her who didn't have developed motor neuron skills because they didn't have crawl space in their hotel rooms. And my immediate reaction was, well, not on my watch. We're going to fix this. And I didn't, you know, and I regret that. You know, no matter how many homes were built, no matter how many new social housing homes, no matter how many supports we put in, either with Rebuilding Ireland Home Loan or the different assistance in the private rental sector, it wasn't enough.
So what, is it impossible to fix?
No, it's not impossible. It just needs more time. And in the negotiations for the programme for government, I made sure that the things that I believed were working were in that. And then some new ideas that I had been working on that I didn't get to implement because the election came too soon. And now the new housing minister is doing that work, but also bringing his own ideas to the table. And the opposition are making their contribution as they do in the Dáil. Now, obviously, the Dáil isn't working as it was, but, you know, that important work is still going on. And the building sector is back open, which is great.
So were you frustrated then at the pace, or were you more frustrated with what was happening in the department or the system in general? Where does your frustration lie? Because I can tell as you're sitting here, you're saying my intentions were good. I knew it was wrong. I wanted to fix it. It didn't happen quickly enough.
Yeah, so it was happening. I could see in the numbers, I could see in what we were doing. I knew it in the faces of the people that we were able to help that it was happening, but it wasn't happening enough. And I knew it needed more time. And my frustration was with the pace of things. My frustration was that I didn't have all of the decision-making powers. You know, because you are the minister, you set policy, but you can't, you know, on individual sites or on individual things, actually do things. And one of the really interesting things in the pandemic, for example, is that you can see how quickly the state can move. And so I was encountering bureaucratic hurdles, which are no one's fault. It's just that they're there because it's a big bureaucracy, which very quickly fell away in the homeless sector, for example, in terms of the health supports and those types of things. And it was really great to see that.
So what were the levers that you wanted to pull that you couldn't at that time?
Oh, I mean, I've said this before, and it's not to get into boring technical things, but procurement. I couldn't just kind of pick five building companies and say, right, just go build and build on these sites. Either didn't control the land as the minister, or we had to go through very lengthy 6 or 9 month procurement processes. They're all there for a good reason. It's to make sure that politicians don't give contracts to friends. It's to make sure that the system isn't abused. But in a time of crisis, they get in the way. Mm-hmm. And I kicked this around with the AG at the time, who was brilliant. And we tried to see what could we get around this in certain ways. But it kind of kept coming back to us that basically, if something is an emergency that isn't foreseen, then you can drop procurement laws. For example, in COVID, but we weren't allowed to do it in housing. Okay. And that really, really frustrated me. But it's no one's fault. It's just how the system is structured.
So Dara O'Brien then, who said previously that your background was too elitist and cosseted, how do you feel looking at him now in the new Angola?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's fair to call the Department of Housing the new Angola. I mean, I was there for 3 years. They're excellent people. They do a huge amount of work. I mean, look at what they did in the storms.
Mm. How's he getting on, though, having said that about you?
Darren's getting on great. I mean, like, you know, it's funny. And again, this is a good thing. This should happen in politics. Darren and I were on opposite sides of the table in the programme for government, and negotiations were on the same side. As I was speaking to him at the time, I thought he was one of the one or two people that might be made Minister for Housing, and I was trying to give him as much information as possible. He very kindly, the morning after he was appointed, met with me so we could do a bit more of that. And then I said, Darren, it's yours now. Like, I'm not going to interfere. This is your opportunity. Go for it. And I think he's made some smart decisions while he's been in there, actually. And I've been impressed by them. Like, coming back to the background stuff, like, you know, I laughed it off at the time because, you know, it originated as a joke from myself. You know, when I first came into the Dáil, myself and a number of colleagues banded together on some policy issues, and I was the only double one.
The five aside, was that?
Miriam Lord called us the five aside. Yeah. So there was ten of us who were working on political reform stuff. We were writing op-eds. We were new to Fine Gael. We were new to politics. We were just trying to challenge things and have a voice. And I was the only Dubliner in it, and I was a D4 boy, of course. So I used to kind of joke about it myself. So when I saw it being made a joke of by Fianna Fáil, I was like, wow, is that a political tactic? What are they doing here? Because, you know, from my own point of view, I've always believed the Irish electorate don't give a damn where you're from, how you talk, what you look like. It's what you're going to do. Are you honest?
Yeah,
are you
hardworking? Except when you say things like co-living is just like living in a trendy boutique hotel.
Well, that was
then
stupid.
It feels like elitist and cosseted.
That totally played into the stereotype that they were trying to build around me, because like that was just foot and mouth syndrome. Like, you look at something like co-living.
So it was stupid.
To say that? Absolutely. Oh my God. I mean, I was kicking myself when I came out. I mean, whatever, you talk about criticism and abuse, like the criticism and the way you know, criticize yourself when you don't do well, you know, that's harder than anything else. But yeah, because whether you've got all the houses that you need in a country or you're in a crisis like we were, there's always going to be some room for something like co-living, because I've experienced it myself. You know, I was I 24 or 25 when I moved to Geneva, and I couldn't find anywhere to live, and I had to agree a very long lease with two people I didn't know. We ended up not getting along. So there was room for that there, but it became partly because of the way I tried to present it, it became something else mm-hmm. in the public
imagination. And you still think it's a good idea?
Yeah, but I think Dara was right to limit it. It was never meant to be this big thing. It was never meant to be for homeless people, and it won't be. It was never meant to be for families. But there's a very small contingent of people who, when they first arrive in a country, don't want to commit to living with three or four people in Rana they don't know, don't want to take on a utility contract for 12 months if they're only going to be there for three. So that it absolutely has a purpose, but it's a small purpose in the scheme of things. So mm-hmm. co-living got a lot of attention. Like, again, when you think about the thousands and thousands of houses and apartments that were being built, it really frustrated me that I allowed co-living to become the thing that it did. And I put that on me. That's
well, maybe you shouldn't have allowed it at all, because, I mean, it was probably always going to become something that was a touchstone for people to criticise you. And also, when I heard about it first, I thought, well, this is going to be end up being like B&Bs. And because we have such a housing crisis, you're going to end up having families in there. So to allow it through the gap at all was going to be a problem.
Yeah, maybe that was a mistake I didn't see, but I thought there was a need for it, albeit a small one. I thought it was a good idea. When I first announced it, no one said anything about it. Actually, RT did a very positive package on it, and it was only a year later when a planning application went in, which was an awful planning application. I couldn't say that at the time because I was the Minister for Planning, so it'd be like a judge saying mm-hmm. that's a terrible case.
Which one was that? You can say it now.
I don't know if I can, because I'm going to be worried about libel and all that stuff, but... I don't have dual privilege, but yeah, and it was terrible, and it became in people's minds a symbol. So at the same time, I went out to defend the concept, and it was written that I was defending that plan. And again, that was a mistake that I mm-hmm. made. But in the scheme of things, I mean, you know, when you think about taking like just the construction sector, I think in 2016, I know people hate when I talk about numbers, but there was, I think, about 10,000 new homes built. In my final year, there was 20,000. And that's something. It's not enough, but it's something. You know, we no longer have developer-led planning in this country. We've got planner-led planning, which is a revolution, which is still kind of taking shape as the plans flow down from central government. The Land Development Agency is going to be around for decades, and it's going to really help build affordable homes. The Rebuilding Ireland Home Loan has helped young people buy homes. Mm-hmm. And Housing First, which is just fantastic, which myself and Simon Harris launched officially, I can't remember what year it was. It gets people off the streets, it gets them into homes. And the great thing about it is it keeps them in homes with all the care and support that they need. So I see all those things working. And yet
I'm sure you have friends who can't afford to buy a house.
Of course. You know, friends back living with their parents. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I mean, everyone is affected by what's happening in housing in this country. Everyone. Like it isn't like some more than others. Absolutely. But, you know, we weren't building houses.
Did housing end your political career?
I don't see it that way at all.
Because I think anyone listening to this might think, if a person leaves politics just a year after losing their ministry, is it all about being a minister for you? Or was it housing that just got to you and you thought, I'm done now. After that experience, I'm just done.
No.
Which was it?
Well, so it's interesting, right? So I always used to argue when I was arguing for political reform in my first dual term that executive office shouldn't be the be all and end all. Like it should be enough to be be able to take amendments through committee. That's being a good TD. That should be enough for a politician. If we're all just racing to try and get into cabinet, we're going to make bad decisions and we're not going to be honest.
You were very quiet for the last year.
Oh, well, I mean, so like there's a couple of reasons for that. So the government changed in July. And what I said to Leo before he'd even thought about appointments, I was exhausted after what had been a very long run from me. I had the banking inquiry at the end of 14 and 15, and at the very end of the banking inquiry, it almost collapsed. And Susan O'Keefe and I had to basically lock ourselves in Ag House to write the report mm-hmm. over Christmas. We were straight into the general election. I was straight into the negotiations for a programme for government. I was then made Minister of State, then Leo's campaign, and then into housing, and then into the pandemic. So by the time that came, before he could even think about what he might do with me, I said, listen, I'd like a breather here. Which I think is fair enough. People like to kind of sometimes step back in their career.
So you asked not to be made a minister.
I said, listen, before you even get into this thinking in your head, you know, I would like to step back from government frontline politics. I want to get back into the constituency stuff. I want to get back into other things. And he said, absolutely, go for it. Totally understand it. Was very supportive in that. And then it allowed me to do that. So it allowed me to, you know, when you're a minister of the constituency, you don't give it the attention you want to give it. So doing that work, I suddenly had the time, which I had wanted to have previously, for new TDs and new senators and new members of the party to try and help them with things and help, you know, with the experience and learning that I had. I was getting very involved in the COVID stuff, both in the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party and in the Dáil, and then doing some nerdy stuff in the background, which I like, trying to get the petitions committee up and running, which I spent a lot of time on.
Okay. But publicly you were quiet. Your public profile was quite low.
Everyone was trying to get me on to speak about housing. And I felt that to give the new minister a fair chance, that that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, you were asked to speak about COVID as well, because you were quite critical, weren't you, at the parliamentary party meetings about COVID strategy from time to time, about the lockdowns. You spoke about that in the Dáil. You favoured what you described as a more nuanced reopening. Yeah. But you didn't come out and say those things in the papers or on broadcast.
And that was intentional, because I support the government, I support what it's trying to do in the pandemic, but I was trying to bring different ideas to the table. And I can do that in two forums. I can do that in the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party with my colleagues to try and influence my fellow colleagues to try and influence the government. Or I can do it in the Dáil directly. And I felt that if I was to come on air or to do media interviews around it, I risked undermining the public health advice. So I was trying to tread that fine line of influencing the decisions without undermining them.
Mm-hmm. Do you have confidence in this government?
I do. Oh yeah, I wrote to Micheál Martin to let him know that I was resigning. And to tell him that he had always had my support as a TD and in the negotiations for government. I think he's a great guy. Mm-hmm. People who don't know him, you know, he's a very honourable kind of person. He's a very good person to deal with. And although I'm not a TD anymore, so I can't support the government in terms of votes in the Dáil, I still support the government.
Your re-election campaign was a very busy one. I know reporters at the time who were on the campaign trail said it was a huge effort that your supporters put into knocking on doors to make sure that you were elected, not least because of the time you'd had in housing. What are you saying to them today?
Look, it's been tough. I've had a lot of phone calls with people in the constituency who've worked so hard for me for 12 years now. You know, 12 incredible years. I was in the council first and then 10 years in the Dáil, obviously, and 4 as a minister. And they stood up for me when I was the minister and they went and knocked on the doors in the last campaign. And they've all been kind of very kind in what they've said. They understand that, you know, I didn't kind of grow up in politics. I don't come from a political family. It wasn't my career of choice initially. I was doing something else, which I loved. But then things were changing here back in 08 into 09. And I wanted to come back and get involved. And I'm saying to them, I'm not leaving Fine Gael. I'm stepping out of Irish politics, but it's to stay in the public sector. It's to go and work abroad, I hope. And I'm still going to be here to help in any way that I can. So they understand that. They understand that after 12 years of such service. I mean, for me, and I remember speaking to Pascal Donoghue about this, you know, I don't have a family yet. I don't have any dependents yet. Politics is 100% for me, and it has been who I have been for 12 years. And I'm excited about going and doing something else for the next period. Mm-hmm.
What did Pascal Donoghue advise you to do?
He understood it. He got it. I mean, like Pascal and I, like, you know, so there's a few people in politics whom I obviously work with and are colleagues, but are also friends now, good friends, because we've been in the trenches together. And himself, like Leo, could see that I was having a difficulty coming to this decision because I didn't want to be letting people down. I don't want to be letting constituents down. I don't want to be letting members down. But I do think, you know...
But you were clearly unhappy. Is that fair?
No, I'm sorry if that's coming across. No, I wasn't unhappy at all. I love this job.
Leaving it.
Yeah, because I think it's the right time to leave. I think it's the right time for me to go and do something else. Like, I think back to my first campaign. Local elections in 2009 for Dublin City Council. I'd only just joined Fine Gael. I knew nothing about politics. Fine Gael were kind of, they were saying, yes, you can run, which was amazing. Enda Kenny had kind of encouraged me, even though he didn't know me. I'd met him one night in London randomly after a rugby game. But Fine Gael didn't really get involved because they're like, who is this guy? Is he going to crash and burn? And it was myself, it was family, it was friends. And at one of our first meetings, I said, listen, guys, like, you know, we don't have any votes, so we can't lose any. Let's just go ahead and do this, you know. And we said what we wanted to say and we did interesting things and I got elected. And it was incredibly exciting. And when I talk to lots of young people today, I talk to people in schools, I talk to people who've joined Fine Gael. And, if I could impart one thing, it would be if you are thinking about running for anything at all, just go for it.
Did you feel the same way about the campaign in 2020 as you felt in 2009?
Oh, like things change a lot.
No is the answer.
Yeah. Oh no,
right?
I mean like in 2009, everything was new.
Yeah.
You were playing for different stakes. They were kind of personal stakes in 09.
But 2020, were you jaded after everything you'd been through at that point?
No. I mean, like nothing was going to stop me from that election. You know, I'd been in housing for 2.5 years at that point. We had done a huge amount of work as a party and as a government, and I wanted the opportunity, because I knew I'd get it in the election, to actually talk about what we'd been doing. And that's what I had. But the stakes are different, because mm-hmm. you're going in as a senior member of the party, as the housing minister, in a housing crisis. So your responsibilities are different. So the campaign is different.
Okay, you know, since different. 9 o'clock, everybody online is talking about this by-election now that you have triggered, right?
So soon.
So I'm just thinking, the first person who comes into my head is how hard the news must have been for Kate O'Connell to take, Fine Gael, a colleague of yours, who was a TD, of course, in the same constituency, but mm-hmm. lost her seat mm-hmm. a year ago.
Yeah.
Would you be supporting her now if she ran in the by-election?
Well, look, I spoke to Kate this morning. I hope she doesn't mind me saying that. I mean, I wanted to let her know what was about to happen, to give her that courtesy. She was a super TD, and she was almost re-elected, and she made a big contribution. I mean, again, Kate's an example of someone coming from a bit of a different background as a pharmacist, who brings perspectives that others don't have because of her professional experience. And it's a good idea to have people coming from that into politics. You don't have to be making a life choice for the next 30 years.
So did you say, off you go now with my blessing? Fight for the seat?
I said to Kate, like as much as I want to say about the conversation that I had with her, I said, look, there's going to be a by-election. There's going to be a convention. It's going to happen soon. And, you know, now's the time to start preparing for that process. There will be a convention. I won't be getting involved in it. I don't think that's fair as the outgoing TD. And we've got 4 excellent councillors in Dublin Bay South. Someone even said to me, Frances Fitzgerald as MEP might even, you know, because she used to represent that constituency. I don't know what's going to happen, but they are really great people who are looking to step up.
Will you be vocal in your support, though, for whomever the Fine Gael candidate is?
Once someone comes through convention, absolutely. I will do what I can to help that person.
Who's your money on coming through convention?
I'm not going to speculate, Claire. That wouldn't be fair. I mean, I think it's going to be a very interesting by-election, because it's a very interesting constituency because of the people who are there as TDs now and the people who'd like to be there as TDs. Mm-hmm.
Would you expect Hazel Chew to run? Eamon Ryan is there already.
I don't know what the Greens might do. I mean, I expect every party to field a candidate. Hazel Chew has a high profile and she's been Lord Mayor and she recently went for the Shannon, and so people know her name. There's some really great other Green councillors in that constituency too who might want a shot at it as well. I really probably shouldn't be commenting on who might come through other people's conventions, if that's okay.
Other Fine Gael politicians who've left, senior ones in recent times, have found a home in high finance. Fine Gael Junior Finance Minister Michael Darcy, CEO of the Irish Association of Investment Managers. Brian Hayes, a CEO of the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland. You're another former Fine Gael Junior mm-hmm. Finance Minister. Is there any chance that you might go down the same road?
No, I've no interest in that world at all. It was very interesting being the Minister of State at that time, because I was there when Brexit just happened. And I remember Michael Noonan calling me and saying, I was on a trip up into Northern Ireland actually, and he said, get back down here, because we had to go and do a lot of media around it. And it was very exciting being on the Cabinet Subcommittee. It was very exciting going to other countries to try and attract financial business in. But, you know, my first love, as weird as it sounds, is nuclear weapon disarmament. That's where I started when I left college. I love international relations. I really loved being back in politics back here. I mean, and again, just to repeat this, if people want to go for it, just go for it. You'll never regret getting involved, even if you don't get elected. We need people to constantly be putting themselves forward. And you never know what might happen in an election, right? So you might actually
get elected.
You're
saying that, though, as somebody who's walking away after a year of this term.
Well, I'm walking away after 12 years. 12 years of being a politician 100% of the time. And I'm saying it because, and I'm doing that because I came to the conclusion myself that I think I've got something to offer now back in international relations. And that's what I'd like to do next in my career. And once you know that, it's only fair to get off the pitch and allow someone else to come in and do the job that you were doing and do it differently and bring new ideas and bring a new energy. But it's a very, very rewarding job. It's a huge privilege to be, I mean, to speak. I mean, every day I walked into Leinster House, you know, and the ushers greet you and the flag is flying. And every time you speak in the door, it's incredible, because it's the national debate and you are trying to influence it, or you're trying to shape it, or you're making decisions to try and help other people. And if you weren't doing it, then who would be? And that's always been kind of my guiding philosophy. Like, why not do it? Why not get involved? Why not at least try? And it's humbling as well. And you work with fantastic people along the way. And I will continue to help people in any way that I can. In the future, if the government, no matter what its hue is, needs my help, if I can help in any way that I can, I will do that too. I'm committed to public service.
Are you saying you're gone from politics completely forever? From being an elected representative or a candidate?
I just can't know that. I mean, I couldn't say anything definitive like that because, I mean, first of all, it would depend if people actually wanted me back, if at some point in the future I wanted to come back. But when I left college, I was on a very particular path and it was in the UN system. That's changed over that kind of 4-year period. And when I came back, I didn't know how long I'd be able to be successful as a TD in terms of getting re-elected. But I had been, you know, in the 4 elections that I contested. And what I'm saying now is I know that for me, my career now, what I'd like to do is to go back into international relations. Is that 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? I just don't know.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Just before you go, do you think that politics now is a much nastier place than it was when you started 12 years ago?
I think there's a couple of things on that. And I've been trying to formulate my thoughts on this properly. So forgive me if I don't get them out properly. Social media has driven a type of 24/7 politics, which I don't think is sustainable. Like, when you're minister, you're always on. And Enda Kenny said to me, look, you have this privilege for a short period of time. You're going to have to do it all of the time. That's just how it works. And I got that and I did that. But every TD now, every councillor always has to be tweeting, always has to be doing these things, always has to be answerable. And I think that's going to just not be sustainable. But there's a separate thing happening in politics as well. The whole way a democracy is meant to function, and I'll be as brief about this as I can, Claire, sorry if I'm taking a bit of time, but it's about people coming into a room who've been chosen by others to make decisions. It involves debate, it involves compromise. You need to be able to talk to the people and flesh things out and have a degree of trust in those engagements. The more tribal politics becomes, the less that's possible, the less compromise. I mean, Leinster House is at its best when it compromises coming out of it because it reflects the will of the people working together to compromise, not one person putting their will on someone else. But if we move into too tribal a type of politics, too much of a personality or identity politics, then democracy will become a tyranny, like a tyranny of the majority, but still a tyranny. And we'll move to a type of US type politics, which I don't think we want to.
And do you think that's happening?
I fear that there's a slippage. And I don't know what the answers are, how to address it. But I really would love if some good people put some time to this. Because, you know, one thing that, you know, having been in other countries as part of my job, we have a very healthy democracy here. We really do. It's been hard fought and well protected, but we're moving into a new phase now and there needs to be some new thinking around that, I think. And I'm sorry I don't have the answers myself, but it's still a very noble profession. It's still something I think people should do. I think we'll find it immensely worthwhile. And it's quite possible that the newer politicians coming in, the social media thing, isn't difficult for them. You know, like when I started off, Facebook was there and we used it as a campaigning tool. I got into Twitter a bit, you know, was never a huge fan of it. But today people are just TikTok, whatever. They're just doing it on Instagram all the time.
And Fine Gael isn't shy about that and about using social media. And, you know, you could argue that Fine Gael and its rivalry, in particular with Sinn Féin, is good at the old tribal politics bit too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like we're all going to slide into this if we're not careful. But social media is the new battleground. But we're still building the rules around that battleground. We know the rules around the geographical, physical battleground. We know what can be done in the constituency in terms of where you can post or how you can post or leaflets, how a canvas works. There's certain written and unwritten rules. They don't exist yet in social media. So we kind of need to come to something on that. And I'm not saying we should move to regulation. I don't even know how possible that is. But I know that it's Dara O'Brien is bringing forward an electoral commission bill because we started working on it with John Paul Phelan, who is one of my ministers of state, that will start to properly police the political space on the internet. You know,
you've been working on the rules around how elections will work in COVID times.
Yeah.
Were you doing that with yourself in mind, with your by-election in mind? Were you thinking, how is this going to work now in Dublin Bay South?
No, I mean, I was doing that last summer and the accusation then was that I was doing it to try and destabilize the talks
or put it under the fear of fall.
No, that was just prudent. It was like, look, hold on a second. If these talks don't work, we're going to need to have an election. And can that happen?
All right. Well, your rules will be used now to fill your seat.
I suppose. I mean, it has to happen in the next 6 months. But, you know, fingers crossed, 80% of us will have the first jab in a couple of months. So, you know.
Owen Murphy, former Fine Gael TD. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Claire.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.